Hello, this is Wendy Bauer returning with a Decatur Herald and Review dated June 13th, 2016. We continue now with the obituaries and death notices. Funerals pending for today, June 13th, include Deborah K. Debbie Freeman, 60, of Decatur, who died Friday, June 10th, 2016. Arrangements by Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Homes in Decatur. Patricia Pat Huddleston, 80, of Mattoon, died Saturday, June 11, 2016. Barclay Funeral Chapel in Greenup handling the arrangements. Robert W. Kopetz, 101, of Decatur, died on Sunday, June 12, 2016. Arrangements by Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur. Billy McFerrin, 81, of Decatur, died Saturday, June 11, 2016. Arrangements by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Roger Schaefer, 63, of Decatur, died Sunday, June 12, 2016. Arrangements by Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur. Selma Sweeney, 94, of Humboldt, died Saturday, June 11, 2016. Arrangements by Edwards Funeral Home, Arcola. The funerals scheduled for today, Monday, June 13, 2016, include Patricia G. Cerny, 80, of Normal, formerly of Decatur, at 2 p.m. in Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home in Bloomington. Patricia Cole, 86, of Decatur, 1 p.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Melvin Dean Curry, 93, of Decatur, at 2:30 p.m. in Kerr Brothers Funeral Home, Lexington, Kentucky. And the obituaries include James L. Geiger of Bement. James L. Hoot Geiger, 81, of Bement, died Thursday, June 9th, 2016. Visitation will be from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Tuesday in the Hines Funeral Home, Bement, with military rites. Graveside services at 1 o'clock p.m. Tuesday in Chatsworth Cemeteries. Memorials may be made to the Albert Parker American Legion Post 620. Marion E. Odell, Moequa. Marion E. Odell, 90, of Moequa, Illinois, passed away at 10 a.m. Saturday, June 11, 2016. A service to celebrate Marion's life will be held at 11 a.m. Friday, June 17, 2016, at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home in Macon. Burial with military rites will be in West Side Cemetery, Moequa, Illinois. The family will receive friends for visitation on Thursday evening from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the American Legion Post, number 370, Moequa, Illinois. Patricia G. Cerny of Decatur. Patricia G. Cerny, 80, of Normal, Illinois, formerly of Decatur, passed away at 9:15 a.m. on Thursday, June 9, 2016, at Heritage Health, Bloomington, Illinois. Her celebration of life service will be on Monday, June 13, 2016, at Calvert and Metzler Memorial Home at 2 p.m. Visitation will be from noon to 2 p.m. at the Memorial Home the day of the service. Memorials may be made to the Heart and Lung Foundation of the Humane Society of Central Illinois in her memory. Patricia Cole, Decatur. Patricia Cole, 86, of Decatur, passed away on Tuesday, June 7, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. A celebration of life will be held at 1 p.m. on Monday, June 13, 2016, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Burial to follow in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Alzheimer's Association. Glenn Norman Kraft, Cerro Gordo. Glenn Norman Kraft, Roswell, New Mexico, formerly of Cerro Gordo, died December 25, 2015. A celebration of life service for Glenn Kraft will be at 2 p.m. Sunday, June 19th in Cerro Gordo United Methodist Church. David A. Johnson, Sr. of Decatur. David A. Johnson, Sr., 72, of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, June 9, 2016. The family will host a celebration of David's life starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Friday, June 17, 2016, in Covington City Park in Covington, Indiana. Memorials are suggested to the family. Elsie I. LaCrone, Decatur. Elsie I. LaCrone, 96, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away on Monday, June 6, 2016, at Fairhaven's Christian Home, Decatur, Illinois. Memorial services will be at 6 p.m. Thursday, June 16th at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, Illinois, with visitation 2 hours prior to service time at the funeral home. Interment will be 10:30 a.m. Friday, June 17th in Macon County Memorial Park, Harristown, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Prairie Avenue Christian Church. Mary Janice McCoy of Decatur. Mary Janice Jan McCoy, 73, of Decatur, passed away on Friday, June 10, 2016, at St. Mary's Hospital. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 14, 2016, at St. Patrick Catholic Church. Visitation will be held from 5 to 7 on Monday evening at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home, with a vigil prayer service at 4:30. Entombment will be in the Star of Hope Mausoleum at Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Helen M. Van Skyk of Decatur. Helen M. Van Skyk, 96, of Decatur, passed away at 7:50 p.m. Tuesday, June 7, 2015, at Hickory Point Christian Village, Forsyth, Illinois. Funeral service celebrating Helen's life will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 14, 2016, at St. John's Lutheran Church, 2727 North Union in Decatur. Burial will be at Mount Zion Township Cemetery. Memorials, if desired, may be made to St. John's Lutheran Church. Dennis James Vaught, 61. Dennis James Vaught, 61, of Decatur, passed away on Wednesday, June 8, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m., Wednesday, June 15, 2016, in Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Private interment will be in the Star of Hope Mausoleum in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Boys and Girls Club or American Cancer Society. And from Sunday's paper, Government and Politics, on the front page, busier than ever, firefighters battle decaying stations. This is from Decatur, written by Allison Petty. At a time when Decatur firefighters are busier than ever, they work in stations with leaky roofs, plumbing backups, and other structural problems that could cost millions to fix. An architectural firm's report, commissioned by the Decatur City Council, showed problems in all of the city's 7 fire stations and estimated that it would cost $8 million to solve them all. Some issues are in danger of causing more serious, expensive damage if they are not addressed. 3 stations have too many problems and should be rebuilt, the firm recommended. It's not a question of comfort, Fire Chief Jeff Abbott said, or one of aesthetics. The firefighters work hard to maintain their stations and keep conditions as good as possible. After all, they live there when they're working. But not addressing these problems could cost the city more in the long run. We make do with what we've got. There's just some stuff that is beyond what we can do, Abbott said. We just need square buildings that drain water off the roof in an appropriate manner. That's all we're looking for, and that the plumbing doesn't back up every other day. Why 7 stations? The city's fiscal woes contributed to the backlog of fire station maintenance and repairs. There is less money, in part, because there are substantially fewer people living in Decatur than there used to be. So do we really need 7 fire stations? Here's the issue. Declining population did not translate to declining geographical boundaries. Decatur sprawls over 47 square miles. Firefighters evaluate themselves by how fast they can be there, wherever the emergency is, and they aim to meet national standards of less than 4 minutes 90% of the time. Each fire station covers about 7 square miles, Abbott said. Eliminating one station would mean slower response times in at least part of the city. Where do you close, and who are you going to determine gets the worst coverage, even though they're a taxpayer in the city of Decatur, he said. Compared to other cities, Decatur lags behind. Springfield, with its 54 square miles, has 12 fire stations, one for every 4.5 square miles. Bloomington has similar coverage, with 5 fire stations and 22 square miles. In fact, all of Decatur's comparable communities cover less ground per fire station, on average. The workload for Decatur firefighters is also greater than ever. Last year, they responded to a total of 10,317 incidents, according to city records. More than half were emergency response calls. There were good intent calls, service calls, hazardous conditions, and more than 600 false alarms. Just 265 of the calls were fires. Abbott said the number of calls has doubled in 20 years, even as the number of structure fires has decreased. It is not clear why. Because firefighters respond to so many different types of emergencies, their trucks are outfitted with plenty of resources to make them versatile. It can answer an EMS call. It can fight a fire. It can help extricate somebody out of a car accident. It can provide monitors to test your house to see if you have a gas leak or a carbon monoxide leak, he said. It's not just a fire truck. There are so many tools that allow us to cover those 10,000 calls. There's a slew of problems. The City Council hired Dewberry Architects, Inc. in November to assess the fire stations and deliver a report. Dewberry sent a team of engineers to each station with the findings presented to the council in April. The results were sobering. In general, there are constant problems with plumbing and heating, ventilation and cooling systems. All of the stations have structural issues and accessibility compliance problems. 3 have leaky roofs. Some vehicle bays are too small, which makes it impossible for the department to extend the lifespan of certain expensive vehicles by moving them to different stations. Part of the ceiling collapsed in the dorm room of Station 5 last summer, revealing mold that had to be removed. Dewberry recommended rebuilding 3 of the stations, Station 3 in Fairview Park, which is 89 years old and cramped, Station 5 near Brentwood Village, which has several serious issues and also would be more beneficial in another location, and Station 7 at the Decatur Airport, which is not owned by the city and also could be moved to decrease response times. Firefighters do what they can. Abbott and City Manager Tim Gleason have praised the department's employees for taking pride in their stations. They've allowed us to keep our head above water, even though it might be only slightly. And now it's my turn to get things taken care of, and I am, Gleason said. The fire department, like all the other areas of city government, suffered during the budget crisis of the past 6 years. Only about $40,000 to $50,000 has been allocated for station maintenance each year, and that includes paying water and garbage bills, Abbott said. When emergency repairs arise, the department has been forced to take money from other line items. The blow has been cushioned by a few grants for equipment, but those can only go so far. You're trying to be a good steward with the money and replace only what needs to be replaced when you can do it, Abbott said. In an unexpected situation like the roof falling down or the furnace going out, when that happens, there's something else down the line that you can then cut out. the city moves toward fixes. Dewberry identified a total of $8.1 million in renovation and rebuilding costs for the fire stations, though $1.8 million would cover the most immediate needs in the next 1 to 3 years. Gleason said he had directed Abbott to identify repairs that are most crucial to be done in the next 2 years. Beyond that, the city will look to develop a plan for the three stations that need to be rebuilt. Do we have opportunities for relocation, given what the city looks like today and what we expect the city to look like 20, 30 years down the road? Gleason said. In the future, the council could seek a bond of $8 million to $9 million, for which Gleason said a revenue stream is already in place because of a property tax increase the council approved in December. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said it was unfortunate that the problems were not limited to one station. She said the council did not want to raise any more taxes and would find a way to fix the problems without doing that. We need to be strategic in where they're placed so we can get to businesses and homes and people as quickly as possible, but we have to do our job of making sure they have the facilities they need, she said. We're not talking about the Taj Mahal, we're talking about leaks in the roof and things functionally not working. There's a list of the fire stations that accompany the article. Station 1 was built in 1994 at 1415 North Water. Station 2 built in 1975 at 2707 East William. Station 3 built in 1927, 1308 West El Dorado. Station 4, built in 1962 at 2760 North 22nd. Station 5, built in 1962 at 225 East Christine. Station 6, built in 1966, 1880 South U.S. Business 51. And Station 7, built in 1970 at 1250 South Airport Road. And over the weekend, Allison Petty wrote, "Golf boring? Not at this camp." From Decatur. Jackson Queen has been golfing pretty much all his life, all 2 years of it. He was crawling with golf clubs, said his mom, Tricia Queen. He had little golf clubs, and he would crawl to the ball and have a natural swing and knock the golf balls all over the house. Jackson was the youngest participant in the Decatur Park District's Junior Golf Academy camp this week at Hickory Point Golf Course. About 30 other children, the rest of them ages 5 and older, spent 3 days learning basic skills in preparation for last Friday's day of play. Jackson asks to practice his golf game several times a week, his mom said. He calls the hits tinks, or if they are especially powerful, super tinks. For 2 consecutive years, he has placed in a worldwide Little Linksters competition for the best peewee golf swing. If more kids showed his enthusiasm, Kurt Rogers would be less worried about the future of the sport. Rogers, golf manager for the Park District, can remember the days when junior golf programs would attract 70 golfers in just one age group. These days, there are so many other competing activities, baseball, soccer, lacrosse, and video games, to name a few. That's why this year's program was designed specifically to include a day of play after 3 days of lessons. When a junior golfer gets an opportunity to play, it becomes the hook that snags them, Rogers said. The district is also trying a different format this year. Instead of offering the program on Tuesdays and Thursdays over several weeks, the district will offer 4-day sessions at different points in the summer. Lessons focus on the fundamentals: grip, stance, posture, ball position, and even etiquette. Avoiding boredom is the key, Rogers said. If kids get bored, you've lost them. That hasn't been the case for Samantha Hickman, 8, and Braden Maxey, 7. The two were signed up for the lessons by Samantha's mom, Dawn Hickman, who babysits Braden. They're enjoying it, Hickman said. Sometimes, after a couple of days of an activity, they're kind of like, okay, I'm bored now. But they haven't had that. And the Junior Golf Academy camp is listed as having courses Tuesday, June 21st through Friday, June 24th, and Tuesday, July 12th through Friday, July 15th from 9 a.m. to 10:15 a.m. at the Hickory Point Golf Course. The fee is $45 or $40 with a resident discount. And Valerie Wells writes from Decatur, Nakia Owens knows her mom started playing basketball when she was very young, and that's how she got good at it. I practice at home, said Nakia, 7, who wants to join a team someday. Then when I play real soccer, I'll be good at it. When Mid-State Soccer Club visited Camp Connections, the Decatur School District's summer program, at Hope Academy on Friday to show campers some fundamentals, Nakia was all over it. Most inner-city kids are familiar with football and basketball, said Eric Jameson of Mid-State, but soccer is steadily more popular in the United States, and more kids are interested in learning the game. This is just the idea of what soccer is, Jameson said. A lot of times, when we come to the inner city, they don't know what the game of soccer is. We want to expose them to soccer, and we're not very specific on the details of the skills, but we're just showing them the idea of how the game is played and kind of sprinkle the skills into their minds. I was giving points for a pass. The boys are more competitive, said Kelsey Cosley of Mid-State, who coached girls while Jameson coached the boys. With the girls, it was more of the idea of being a team. I don't know that a lot of them have been on a team before. They were all excited when someone scored. Everyone cheered. They set up 2 goals, each for girls and boys, and divided them into teams, and after a brief introduction of how to move the ball, let them have at it. The kids took to it right away and chased the ball up and down the field like old pros in spite of the hot sunshine. We used to play soccer at my old school, said Tatiana Ramey, 6, who shouted, I made that goal during her group's session with Mid-State. Our theme this year is how to stay active and healthy, counselor Amanda McInerney said. Our goal is to get them experienced with new sports they might not have had a chance to play, to show kids and teach them the basic rules and have people from the community come in. And the Herald and Review staff report from Decatur. Herald and Review staff garners statewide newspaper awards. Herald and Review staff members won 5 first place awards in statewide newspaper contest results announced Thursday and Friday. Chief photographer Jim Bowling won a total of 4 first place awards in the 2 contests. In the Illinois Associated Press Media Editors Contest, Bowling won first place and the Photo Sweepstakes Award for his photograph Line of Fire, which was taken during the fire at the Action Equipment Company warehouse on January 21st. The photo shows an Ameren, Illinois employee disconnecting power while the fire rages in the background. Bowling also won first place in Spot News Video for his video about Paw Print Ministries, and first place in General News Photo for his photo of 2 children at an alopecia areata awareness event. He also won 3rd place in the Best Use of Social Media by an Individual category. Reporter Allison Petty won a 2nd place award in Spot News for her coverage of the death of Decatur Mayor Mike Tuna McElroy. Photographer Lisa Morrison won 2nd place in Sports Action Photo for her picture of young participants in the Rodney T. Miller Triathlon, and 3rd place in Feature Photo for a photo of a yoga class that includes cats. Graphic artist Jean Zerfowski won 3rd for an informational graphic about horseradish. In the contest sponsored by the Illinois Press Association, Bowling and sports reporter Aaron Dow both won awards. Bowling won 1st place in General News Photo for a photo of farmers watching the harvest during the Farm Progress Show. Dow won 1st place in Sports News for his coverage of a high school football playoff game played in the snow, and won 1st place in the same category for his story detailing the championship run of the Arcola football team. These awards reflect the fine efforts of not only these individuals, but all of our employees at the Herald and Review, editor and general manager Gary Sawyer said. Our focus is always on delivering outstanding news and information to our readers. And additional local briefs from Decatur. Egg Cafe Luncheon. Lee Strom is scheduled to be the featured speaker Thursday, June 23rd, during the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce Egg Cafe Luncheon. Strom is the executive director of Farm Illinois, a group effort to develop a comprehensive and integrated strategic plan to ensure sustainability and innovation in the state's food and agriculture industry. The program will be from noon to 1 p.m. at the Beach House, 2301 East Lakeshore Drive. Doors open at 11:30 a.m. Tickets cost $20. Visit www.decaturchamber.com or call 217-422-2200. Also in Decatur, Senior Center Party. The Decatur-Macon County Senior Center will have a Father's Day and Flag Day party starting at 11 a.m. Tuesday, June 14th, with entertainment by Linda Dust and lunch from La Gondola. There will be bingo and door prizes after lunch. The cost is $5 for members and $6 for the public. Make reservations by calling the center, 217-429-1239, by Monday, June 13th. And we'll finish up with Mary Hunt, The Art of the Grilled Cheese Sandwich. Mary Hunt for the Herald and Review. When I go out of town, I often return to find a big square burn mark on my best stainless steel skillet. That's the telltale sign my husband attempted to prepare the one and only item in his repertoire of home-cooked meals, a grilled cheese sandwich. The man does not know how to cook. His grilled cheese sandwiches are burned on the outside and cold and hard on the inside. Poor guy. When it comes to this basic, all-American favorite, Harold does everything wrong. He starts with a blazing hot skillet, he puts cold butter in the pan, he cuts uneven slices of cheese, and he piles the thickest slices of cheese in the middle of the bread. This man really needs his wife. There's an art to preparing the perfect grilled cheese sandwich. Gently place the sandwich in the heated skillet, buttered side down. Turn the heat to low. This allows the bread to brown slowly and evenly, and the longer you wait to flip the sandwich, the better result you'll get. In the meantime, brush the top slice with melted butter. Once the bottom slice is crisp and golden brown, gently turn the sandwich over and repeat 5 to 8 minutes per side until the cheese is evenly melted. Remove from the pan, cut, and serve. Of course, there are variations, the grilled cheese with bacon, grilled cheese with ham, onion and cheese sandwich, tomato cheese sandwich, and the grilled mozzarella sandwich. There's even the Greek grilled cheese sandwich with crusty bread like sheepherder's bread using feta cheese, sliced tomato, basil or oregano leaves, olive oil, and follow the same instructions. This has been Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, June 13th, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Thank you.